Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lisa H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, May 29th, 2024, and this is a 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 22. We'll be reading and commenting on the second paragraph that begins, Why Does He Behave Like This? And ends with respect to other matters. Today's readers for the 12 steps, Patrick O., the 12 traditions, Lila M., readers of the text, Rick J., Nancy R., Vanessa's our backup, and our newcomer greeter is Anne Marie M., our second hour host is Leah S., and today Kathy S. will have announcements. The reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, May 28th, 2024. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,436. That's 21,436. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,437. That's 21,437. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Patrick O. to please read the 12 steps.
Hello, it's Patrick, a compulsive eater. These are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick O. And I will now ask Lila M. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Lila M. in Toronto, Canada. The 12 traditions. One, human welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Lila M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 22, beginning with the second paragraph that begins, why does he behave like this through with respect to other matters? And we'll be commenting on that one paragraph. And I will ask Rick J. to please begin reading for us.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for your service. My name is Rick J. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. Why does he behave like this? If hundreds of experiences have shown him that one drink means another debacle with all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why is it he takes that one drink? Why can't he stay on the water wagon? What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? Indeed, you know, I mean, I when I was in, you know, the throes of my compulsive overeating, you know, I had no choice, and I was locked in this mental obsession that would take me to the food, and I was desperate to find ease and comfort, just to find relief, you know, in this emotional turmoil that I existed in. I needed to find something that could take me away from that. And then once I took that first bite, as we all know, I triggered allergy. It's like lighting a fuse. Once that fuse is lit, there's nothing that can stop that fuse. And then the explosion always happens. It happens with something. And I think, too, you know, for me, it's like remembering the time I came back from the doctor and I had been called a ticking time bomb. And my son, who was very young at the time, heard me telling my wife about being the ticking time bomb. And he found me eating this huge, massive bowl of buttery, salty popcorn right after that. And he came and I realized he was in tears. And he asked me if my doctor knew I was eating that. And we had this little ceremony where we dumped the popcorn into the trash. I held his hand. I looked him in the eye. I said, I'll never eat like this again. And I meant it with all my heart. And 2 hours later, he caught me eating this big, huge family bag of Skittles, trying to hide it, stuffing it under my computer monitor, and then watching the Skittles just roll down out underneath the monitor like a parade. And, you know, him looking at me and just that little light went out of his eyes, you know. And he just said, clearly you have issues, you know, at 6 years old, you know. And And the only way I could get through the pain of that was to go back into the pantry and get every single thing I could eat. You know, and also I have a great obsession that somehow, someday, I will not just control my eating, but enjoy my eating again. I want that ease and comfort. And I am beyond human aid. I have an illness, this physical, mental, and spiritual. That's why I did that. And the only thing I can do is to find a connection with a power greater than myself, to have a spiritual awakening, a transformation that takes away the mental obsession. That's it. And I do that on a daily basis. I'm not cured of this. Every day is the day I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. My recovery is contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, which I practice all the time. So to think that I can go in there now and eat certain foods and ingredients safely, you know, that's insanity, but I have the spiritual perspective and the clarity and the connection with my higher power and the people in these rooms. I know that. I do the spiritual actions that alleviate the mental obsession to bring me to the food and to try to control it and enjoy it. That's my step one for me. I know that there will never be any control and any enjoyment of it. I've proven that to myself over and over and over again. And with that, I pass.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick J., for getting us started this morning. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you've shared on any of the vision meetings on Monday or Tuesday, we ask you to hold back this morning. And who would like to share on what was read?
Priscilla A.
W.
Priscilla, Chris W.
Trisha W.
Trisha W.
Nancy P.
Melissa
S. Yes.
Melissa
P. Okay. Nancy P. I heard Melissa C. and
Rob
Tina
G.
S. Rob G. Let's stop right. Okay, hang on. I think I heard Ann. I'm going to stop there. So this is what I have. I have Priscilla H., Chris W., Trisha W., Nancy P., Melissa C., Tina S., Roz G., and Ann, I believe. So, Priscilla H., you're up, followed by Chris.
Thank you so much. Priscilla H., grateful to be physically recovered and otherwise recovering from the disease of addiction to food, as well as many other addictions that I've experienced in my lifetime. You know, this paragraph has three whys and a what in it. Why does he behave like this? Why is it? Why can't he? And what has become of the common sense and willpower? And as the lead speaker, lead chairperson just shared, the answer to that is addiction. Addiction is the reason. Why? Let me just say that my understanding of addiction today, and I don't think the neurologists even totally understand that process, but it happens in the brain, not the stomach, not the mouth, but in the brain. And when I'm addicted to something, to recover from it, number one, I have to completely abstain from it. And number two, I have to find out what it is that I was using that substance or that experience to escape from, because I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. At almost age 88 now, I still don't totally understand life. A little bit more gets revealed one day at a time. But my higher power, well, is showing me one day at a time that the answer to addiction lies in the steps. step number one or step zero, as I've heard it described, completely abstaining from the thing or things that I'm addicted to. And the rest of the steps have to do with learning how to live with the guidance of my higher power. So thanks for letting me share. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Priscilla H. And Chris W., you're up, followed by Tricia W.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Tricia, compulsive overeater. Happy to be on a meeting today. I am recovering, recovered, and abstinent daily by the grace of God. And I recently set a boundary in a relationship for myself that needed to be set. And, you know, that brings up a lot of fear for me and insecurity. And one of my core issues, I've done a lot of work around it, is the fear of abandonment. And, you know, food was my comfort. And I just need to speak up and talk about this struggle. I'm abstinent, but I would be lying if I said that it wasn't calling me. So I need to take action and get on a meeting and talk about it and do some reading and do some outreach. Because I'm a goner. I mean, I'm just a goner. Once I get into the food, that's it. I mean, it's like, you know, I can't take that feedback off. So I'm just claiming my seat. I'm happy to be here. And that's it. And it's a day at a time. And I know that God is in control of my life. And I want to be in control, which is I'm not. And I have to, you know, step three, turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand him. And that's what I have to do on a daily basis. So thank you for listening. Everyone have a great day. Bye.
I'm so sorry. Was that Tricia or was that Chris? I missed that first.
It's Tricia W.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Tricia. Well, I thought I heard Chris W. Did I hear you, Chris? Okay, maybe I got that wrong. Thank you, Tricia W. Nancy P., you're up, followed by Melissa C.
Hi, good morning. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. Thank you for letting me share. So why does he behave like this? First of all, the uncomfortability with living, my uncomfortability with living was only possible with food. But even knowing the answer doesn't matter because, okay, good for me, you know, I don't care why I eat. What I want to do is stop eating. And not only stopping, I don't want my mind to be in this prison of, you know, hiding, sneaking, cheating, and lying. I don't want that anymore. Well, now I don't want it. Then I didn't even know I was living that way. And all the experiences that I had didn't teach me anything. And that's why abstinence without the spiritual answer is no good. I mean, somebody said earlier in the week or last week, you know, try being, you know, she said, I have been abstinent without the spiritual recovery and it was terrible. And I agree. It's, you know, I felt like my skin was being flayed off and turned inside out. It was terrible. And then it talks about another debacle with all its attendant suffering and humiliation. My pain has no memory. It's always fresh as a new coat of paint. Doesn't matter how many times I've felt it or how old it feels or how tired my pain feels. It's always is strong and it never teaches me anything. Pain doesn't teach me. And, you know, I never had common sense and willpower around food. And in fact, not so much around food, but in my life, I'm not a big willpower and common sense kind of a girl, you know. I mean, instinct sometimes kept me out of terrible circumstances, but for the most part, I jumped in with both feet to, you know, ridiculous situations that, you know, would curl your hair if it's straight and straighten it if it's curly. I mean, I baffled myself. So I don't care why anymore. All I care about is that I do something and have something that works in my life without exception in all circumstances, no matter what. And the reason I know that I have that is because I've had several circumstances, and no matter what, that have floored me, and yet I haven't eaten so much as a single grain of rice. Ever, ever, ever. I don't cheat, hide, sneak, or lie, pick, or lick, or anything around food. And I don't care what happens other than that, because in the end, not even the end, I know I'm going to be okay. Even when I'm in pain, I know I'm okay because I'm not eating. And the pain, you know, my goal today is to be a riverbed, and I want my life to flow over me. And sometimes, you know, there's styrofoam cups, plastic bags, dead bodies, and old tires in that river. But once I took out all the man-made debris, all that was left was roots, leaves, grass, and trees. And rivers need that stuff to clean themselves. And, you know, the more in my life, the more that I live, the more joy I find. Every breath, my life is filled with joy and light and buoyancy. And there's one reason and one reason only. Everybody say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy P. And Melissa C., you're up, followed by Tina S.
Good morning.
It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. And yeah, really, you know, I'm thinking about that why. You know, I always, I used to love the examining the why question. And for me, every time I examined the why question, it was, you know, the motivation behind there was to assign blame to somebody, something. And sometimes it was like, you know, I wanted to assign myself some blame too. But most of the time when I asked why, it was because I wanted to find out who did this to me, you know, who made me so ineffective where food was concerned. And, you know, I mean, I would look at, oh, society, you know, society gave me false messages about women and their bodies. And, you know, I even remember at one point I would look at a picture of myself in my middle school years where I really felt fat. And I remembered looking at that picture saying, I wasn't fat there. What was that about? Why was I so, you know, so much in thought that I was fat? And I thought, oh, that's the why. See, I got a wrong message about my body, and that's why I ate like that. And, you know, I don't think that's the truth, actually. I think the why for me is that I had a false, you know, understanding of who I was in this world. I think I walked around thinking that I was God, you know, that and or wanting to play God you know, I'm wanting life to fit itself around me. And I think when I walked around that way, I ate, you know, and that started as a little girl. But, you know, here's what I found out. Why is the question that really means I don't like this, you know? And whenever I approach this disease from that position of I don't like this, I'm in battle. And that's not acceptance, you know. I don't have willpower where food is concerned. I don't, to this day, you know. But I don't have to call upon willpower. That's the beautiful thing. Because willpower is something I have to call upon when I want something, and I have to exert all my will to keep myself from having it. And what we have, you know, put the why question aside, what am I going to do about it? Well, when I do what I'm directed to do, what these steps taught me, to rightly relate myself to God, willpower is not required, because the incredible gift is that the desire gets removed. You know, and I want to offer that as a piece of hope for anybody who's new and struggling and thinking, how in the world am I going to get this level of abstinence and this level of surrender and all of this? And, you know, that's what this program has to offer. We are not in battle with the food anymore. I'm not anyway. The desire has been lifted. And that's an incredible thing, and that is a gift that came from God. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa C. And Tina S., you're up, followed by Roz G.
Thanks so much, Lisa, for your service. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Yeah, what a great paragraph. Wonderful shares this morning. I'm just so where I belong. What a wonderful way to live, you know. And, You know, what I know about this paragraph is if the allergy of the body were my dilemma, you know, those diets all those years would have worked, you know, because I was on so many and they worked until they didn't, you know, and it tells me that my main problem centers in my mind. On page 45, it talks about lack of power is my dilemma. And we had to find a power by which we could live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. You know, and I didn't want to hear any of that. I wanted that willpower to be working, like people talked about. And it failed me utterly. You know, it worked in some areas of my life, you know, and it still does today. But with my addictions, and, you know, I have several, you know, lack of power is my dilemma. You know, and I had to get to that place that I was powerless and that my life's unmanageable. And then, you know, and I had to really, you know, concede that to my innermost self, that that was the condition. And then the solution is 2 through 12, you know. And for me, you know, and I loved it. I love surrender, surrender, surrender. You know, that's really what I have to do on a daily basis, you know, because this is a disease. I wake up daily. You know, I'm a compulsive eater when I wake up in the morning, you know, and I'm several other things. And what I have to do is I ask God, you know, to keep me sober, abstinent, and sane. I ask him that every morning. And I ask him to give me the willingness and the ability to follow a food plan that I don't usually want to do. But I do because I like what I have today. You know, I love that we talk about, you know, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And that's, and we're not blown smoke. It's the truth. You know, I've been transformed through the 12 steps, you know, and that continues to happen daily. And, you know, again, I always say that I'm a person of more, and I want more. So I'm going to do this still with you all. And with that, I'll pass. Great stuff.
Thank you, Tina S. And Roz G., you're up, followed by Ann.
Hi, good morning. I'm Roz G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And I learned in this meeting that the reason why I behave like this is because I have a built-in forgetter. and it's there. And if I'm not reminded by working with sponsees and going back to the doctor's opinion, my built-in forgetter will take over. And yesterday I was at a teacher, you know, end of the year potluck, and there were chocolate chip banana cakes on the table for the potluck. And my eyes went, wow, that looks really good. And then, I don't know, I drew upon my relationship with God and said, God, what will happen if I eat those? And it was like God said to me, what has happened to you in the past when you eat chocolate chip anything? And it has always been undesirable. It has always been weight gain. It has always been guilt, shame, and remorse. It has always been regret. What? Why do I want to go back there? I do not want to go back there. But as was said before, every day I wake up and, you know, I am a compulsive overeater. I have a food plan. I got a food plan from a professional nutritionist. I have a book that I study every day. I believe in God, that God is more powerful. And, I have avenues to turn to. So I don't really need to beat up on myself for looking at the cake and thinking, that looks really good. Or in other instances that I'm in, because I do have a built-in forgetter. I am very honest. There are people that I trust that I can talk to. I can remember that the book says that, you know, it's in the working with others at first sentence that says that no other thing is going to be as good as working with another compulsive overeater. And when I do, I go back to the doctor's opinion and I'm reminded of what it was like. Or if I'm in a situation that I was in yesterday, I can silently say a prayer and ask God to help me to not eat that certain thing or to remind me of what it was like when I did, because my built-in forgetter will take over. And I just go ahead and live my life with a lot of joy. And I have a wonderful food plan that has amazing food on it. I love my food, and I love my life in between meals. Another meal is coming, and I have such a great life because of the book, because of God, because of these meetings. And so I don't want to go back to the suffering that I went to. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. And Anne, you're up, if you'll give us the first initial of your last name.
I am Anne P. from Maryland, and when I heard that passage again, I thought, well, yeah, because when we rely on ourselves, our own unsteady willpower, this is what happens. I was in recovery for many years, relying on my own unsteady willpower, and guess what happened? I kept relapsing. I lost a lot of weight, but I kept relapsing. And my monkey mind, my mind that wanted to say that the rules don't apply to me, kept persuading me that I could make exceptions. And I can't. Of course I can't. And it's when I fully surrender to my higher power, to God, and I realize I can't make these decisions. I have to just follow what God wants me to do and not play mind games about, oh, just this once, that I am in recovery. And it's just, you know, we can play games with our minds, with ourselves, as much as we want to. It is when we stop and truly surrender and hand over to God that we are recovered. And I've had people tell me, oh, you're so strong, you're so strong. No, I'm incredibly weak. That's the problem. I can't, once I start, I can't stop. And I keep trying to convince, I kept trying to convince myself I could, but I can't. And I am so grateful to be in recovery and to be a part of this program. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Anne P. And we are on page 22 in the chapter, There Is a Solution, where we read the second paragraph, comments on that one paragraph, and it begins, why does he behave like this, and ends with respect to other matters. Who else would like to share this morning?
Anita
Toledo.
I got Anita. I missed somebody. Lisa C. Reba P.
Laura L.
Okay, there was a, hang on. There was a gentleman. I keep missing you.
Jim S. in Toledo.
Okay, so I have Anita J., Jim S., Lisa C., Reva P. I have Carmela. There was somebody in between. Katie or?
And Laura L. in Connecticut.
Okay.
Katie B.
Is that Katie G.?
B as in boy.
Thank you, Katie. Okay, Laura L. and Carmela G. Okay, let's go with that. We'll see how much time we have left. Was there somebody else wanting to sneak in?
Maura Z.
Okay, Maura, I got you, and we'll see. Hopefully we'll get there. So I have Anita J., Jim S., Lisa C., Reva P., Katie B., Carmela G., Laura L., and Maura Z. So Anita J., you're up, followed by Jim S.
Thank you. I'm unmuted, correct?
You are.
Okay, good. I used to spend up, this is Anita J. I'm recovered in Massachusetts, west of Boston. I saved a lot of money since I stopped asking these questions. Why? You know, why did this stop? Why all these things? And because people have made a lot of money on people like us, writing books, columns in newspapers, all kinds of things. And how far does it get me? Just a little bit, just a tiny little bit. I learned when I went to a pay and weigh, really the proper way to eat. I never learned it. that was fine, but learning isn't my problem. I'm a good learner. It's admitting, it's surrendering. You have a problem, girl. It has nothing to do with your lack of nutrition information. It has to do with addiction. When you put that especially sweet, but it's more than sweet, things in your mouth, you turn into another person. And that person begins to feel like the real person. Even though she doesn't want to be social, she wants to eat alone. What is it about eating alone? I think I knew. I was so ashamed. Because looking at me, I shouldn't be eating these things. So it's a terrible thing, but for me now today it doesn't feel so bad because I've got the answer and I'm willing. I'm willing to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself, which there was always there. I just didn't know it. And I'm very grateful. I'm grateful I found this meeting because the message was delivered in such a way that I felt like I was hit over the head, finally. And I'm very grateful, and thanks for everybody doing service and sharing. I pass.
Thank you, Anita J. And Jim S., you're up, followed by Lisa C.
Good morning. My name is Jim S. I'm in Toledo, Ohio. And for me, the thing that works is the presence of God in my life. Page 86 of the Big Book says, we let God direct our thinking. I was in an OA meeting. I was thinking about drinking, and that verse, that line came to me. I drank, but I stopped before it was too late, and I went to a meeting and told on myself, and I've been in fellowship ever since. If I'm going to surrender, I have to surrender to something, and for me, I have to surrender to my higher power every day. And I don't do it perfectly, but I'm forgiven when I mess up, when I go astray. I'm just so glad there's a program. I'm so glad that God makes himself known to me. I appreciate the atmosphere of recovery. That's what triggers me to follow him, is when I come into a meeting and I sense people crying out for help. That's where I need to be, in a meeting like that. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim S. And Lisa C., you're up, followed by Reva P.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Good morning, everybody, and gratitude as always. I mean, this paragraph is great. You know, I think, you know, as a teacher, I often, you know, at the beginning of every unit, I pose essential questions for the unit. And the goal is not to answer those questions, you know, but they're posted on chart paper in my classroom, and we refer to them often because sometimes the answers are kind of hiding there. And even when I teach students how to write an essay, right, we always start with a question. We build the answer from the question. And, you know, when I think about this, like, the answer really is right there for me. What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? That's the answer. I do have great willpower in lots of areas of my life. I'm highly functional in many areas of my life. I could not fix this. And so then the answer becomes, like, do I really think that I can apply what works in some areas of my life to this problem that I can't fix, or am I willing to recognize that as a human being, I don't have that power? And I'm really thankful, like, to not want to answer everything anymore. You know, I live with that more will be revealed, right? Because if I don't have that, life becomes very despairing. you know, because if I can't find the answers and I believe that I'm capable of finding the answers, and I can't find them, well then, what is the that relief that I experienced? That was funny. That relief that I experienced when I recognized that, like, I don't know everything. Oh my gosh, there's so much more that I can feel and explore and be. And, you know, on the subject of, like, you know, just complete abstinence for the body, I also think about what spiritual recovery is now like for me. The other day I was driving in the car with my oldest daughter. My mom called, and obviously it was on speaker because I was driving, and had this conversation with her. It was starting to go a little back and forth, and she was getting a little frustrated with me. And my daughter at one point let out like a little sniffle of her nose, like she was sort of laughing. And my mom goes, "Who's in the car with you?" And I said, "Nobody." It was like this knee-jerk reaction to just lie, little white lie, right? What does it matter? And we got off the phone, and then I called her back. And before I called her back, I looked at my daughter and I said, that's not okay to do. I called back. I apologized to my mom. And I said, I don't even know why I did that. I said, but it's not okay. And I'm sorry. Because now what has happened for me with emotional sobriety and spiritual recovery is that I can't take a bite of those spiritual maladjusted behaviors. I can't take a bite of my abstinent foods. Yes, one second. And I can't take a bite of a lie or a cheat or a steal. Thank you, God. It felt worse than a bite of food that would send me down the tubes. And I'm just so grateful that I have this program that has taught me how to be in the world. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa C. And Reva P., you're up, followed by Katie B.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. For me, before I came into this program, the figuring out, the analysis, the trying to answer the why question drove me more and more into the obsession. And I needed to get educated. And that's the purpose, I understand, of this book, to answer questions specifically. So I learned, and it was good to learn, that I have a physical allergy, and I had to figure out for myself what that meant. In terms of ingredients and foods and behaviors, and that I have a mental obsession that takes me back to the substance that I'm allergic to, which keeps me in a vicious cycle. And any more figuring out, why do I have the allergy? What's going on in my brain? What's happening in the cells? I don't need to know the answer. And there's a great story in the fourth edition, and the title is, Because I'm an Alcoholic. All I have to know is I'm a real compulsive overeater. I have the two traits that identify me and diagnose myself that I relate in, and that's it. And when it comes to, you know, why or why I think a certain way or why I get resentful or why I'm so scared, that's none of my business. And this chapter is about the solution. So once I can have that drop into my heart, because, you know, this is not like a logical question. I figure out the why answer, I answer the question, and I'm good to go. This is something that drops down to my gut where I get it. Oh, my goodness, this is who I am, and I'm never going to be anything different. I'm not going back to the cucumber once I'm a pickle kind of thing. Like, the physical allergy is not going away. But you know what the miracle is? The miracle is if I do what it says and put down my alcoholic foods and work the steps and access and continue to develop this relationship with power, what that power does for me is it gives me the sanity to know that, no, if I pick that up, I'm going to trigger the allergy. If I pick up that resentment, I'm going to get into the spinning cycle, which will make food a step up. Thank you, God, for the differentiation of the false and the truth. And that's what that power does for me. So it's more like, yeah, what do I need to do? No more figuring out. It really does drive me back into the obsession. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Reva P. And Katie B., you're up, followed by Carmela G.
Hi, good morning. This is Katie B. from New York. So as I was looking at that paragraph and that word why, I am brought back to being maybe 14 years old. So over 30 years ago. Is that right? Do the math on that. Yeah. And sitting on my couch watching TV, eating, there was a certain brand of cookie, and they sold party platters of the cookie, like for hosting, like this huge assortment. And I remember sitting on my couch at night, eating the whole thing, and one time looking at my mom and saying, why am I doing this? Why am I eating like this? And my heart breaks for my 14-year-old self. And I struggled with that why for decades. And the why brought me to therapy. There's nothing wrong with therapy, but it brought me to all sorts of clinics and therapy and DBT and all this sort of stuff, with, you know, get to the root of my problem, to fix myself, to change my behavior. And if I wasn't blaming somebody else, like my family, I was blaming myself. It was my fault. I'm weak. I'm weak-willed. But that why was always this, like, driving force, this driving question. And why was that? Or there's another why. It's because that's how I solve problems. That's how I think many of us solve a problem. We ask why. We figure out the why, because we typically need to understand the reason for something in order to try to fix it, to try to solve it. So that question makes sense in so many things, but it doesn't make sense in my addiction, in my compulsive overeating. I think I forgot to say I'm a compulsive overeater, recovered. Thank you, God. So why isn't the question? Because I can't solve the problem. So thank you for step one, that I know I can't solve the problem. And now I know through recovery, through the 12 steps, and through all of you in the fellowship, that God can solve my problem. And I learned that starting in the doctor's opinion, right? And it's not my fault. And it's not my mom's fault. And it's not, it doesn't matter really about fault. It's that I have this problem that I can't fix. And so when I surrender it to God by working this program, the why doesn't matter anymore, the science of it, the how, it's just it, God does it. And from somebody who had no relationship with God and no interest in God to now God is the central focus of my life because God has worked this miracle in my life. I am living, breathing proof that this program works. Thank you. And I pray it works for everyone on the line, and I'll pass. Have a good day.
Thank you, KDB. And Carmela G., you're up, followed by Laura L.
Thank you so much. Carmela G., gratefully recovered for today in New York. For years, for decades, almost seven decades, I knew all the answers, and I was a woman of faith. So what do I need this program for? And it took me finally being open enough to hear that I was not God. What a revelation. My first amends, when I heard about this program and people were making amends, I thought, man, oh man, I'm my first amends must be to my higher power that I call God, because I had to apologize for acting and thinking, truly believing that I was his equal. And it took this program, and even though I was a woman of faith and practiced my faith, I thought, every day, it was such a revelation. And that's the gift of every single day with this program. If we keep our minds open, because there's a message that he will send us every day on how we should live. And when I open my eyes in the morning, I say, where are we going and what am I doing today? Not Madam Full Charge and storming ahead and jumping out of bed and bullying everybody and everything in my way. And it is such a beautiful life and a peaceful life on this journey of happy destiny. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Carmela G. And Laura L., if you'll take 2.5 minutes, Mara Z. will also have 2.5 minutes. Please share with us.
Sure, no problem. Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm Laura L. from New Britain, Connecticut, compulsive overeater. Thank you all for your service and for your shares this morning. The word that stood out for me most was humiliation, and that with shame as well. So humiliation for me was, well, I grew up thinking there was something major wrong with me, and the food and the powerlessness over food just reinforced that. So I didn't know I was powerless. I mean, humiliation was having to weigh myself in front of my parents every night so they could see if I lost any weight during the day. Humiliation was going back to a job I had worked at in the past, and I heard people talking behind. They didn't think I could hear, but I heard them say, wow, she put on all that weight again. What's wrong with her? You know, that sort of thing. And then humiliation is, before I came into the program, I remember I was in a public event with, visiting, again, people I'd worked with in the past, and I could not stay away from the food table. I just stayed there, and then I would try to take things, hide them somewhere on me, go to the bathroom, taste them, put them all in my mouth, and then spit them out. That was one form of bulimia I had then. It was just humiliating. I was so ashamed, and I knew everybody was staring at me and couldn't understand why I couldn't stay away, why I couldn't join them. I just needed. So anyway, what really very quickly, what I love about my 23 years in program is now knowing that nothing is major wrong with me. I am powerless. I have a higher power that loves me unconditionally and is teaching me how to love myself and others without condition. So and that I have all of you and my daily disciplines and the hard work that I do in the service and the sacrifice. But it's all worth it to finally get rid of that humiliation and that shame that is carried. Been carried in my brain, and then turns on me when I'm not spiritually fit. So thank you all, and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Laura L. And Mara Z. Please share with us.
Thank you, Lisa. Excuse me, Mara Z. Gratefully recovering in Virginia. Why does he behave like this? I'm never going to know the answer to that other than to know I've got a spiritual malady. I'm going to want to pick up as soon as I trigger the allergy. The obsession in my mind takes over once I've ingested and I break out in more. That's what my allergic reaction is, more. I want more of the same. I want more of something else. And I've never, ever been sated when in relapse. And I'm just coming out of another relapse. And I've got 2 clean days, and I'm grateful for them. And a new sponsor, and I'm grateful for her. So do I need to know why? I don't think so. I need to just accept what is. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. I find that happening many times during the day. But that's the deal. I'm a compulsive overeater. And asking all of these questions, for me, takes me down a rabbit hole. It just leads me to uncertainty and no answers. It doesn't lead me to an answer. And if I can come up with some, I can just, you know, create some kind of answer that answers these questions, it's not going to be based on fact. It's just going to be based on what I'm feeling, and feelings are not fact. So I am a compulsive overeater. And I say that I'm a grateful compulsive overeater because even on the hardest days, when I don't want to fix my food because I'm being lazy, an abstinent day is always better than the noise I hear in my head when I'm in relapse. Abstinence quells that noise. I still have difficult times. I still don't want to do anything. I still want to be lazy. But I know the next right thing. The next right thing for me is to be abstinent, to put down the food. The next right thing for me is to find a path to my higher power because that's always been my weakest link. And through the steps and through you all, I can find that path to my higher power, and I'm grateful for it. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Mara. And thank you to everyone who shared this morning. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And there are two share IDs for this morning because of our little technical glitch in the meeting. For today, Wednesday, May 29th, 2024, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 21,443. That's 21443. And then the second one is 21444, 21,444. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Nancy R., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only until then.
Good morning. Nancy R. from Northwestern Illinois, recovered compulsive overeater. So grateful. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you in touch.